homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Most or many people who have studied the Buddha's teachings for some time are familiar with the teaching of what's called, often called, the 12-fold dependent arising or dependent wheel of becoming. And I don't want to talk too much about that because the reference to it can be found in many different places, and people have written entire books and libraries about it. In it, the Buddha describes the matrix of conditions that give rise to sentient beings. This can also be seen as how we go from one moment to the next in our minds. And it usually starts off with ignorance, which is the supporting condition for volition or karmic, what's called karmic formations, which is the supporting condition for consciousness, etc., and leads to existence, birth, and suffering. Birth is the supporting condition for suffering. There is another, often what is, when this is talked about, when the Buddha talks about it, he says, with the absence of suffering, birth does not exist, etc. With the absence of birth, existence does not exist, all the way back to ignorance. And it's often depicted in a circle, because that is how it occurs. The suffering of one lifetime, if not dealt with in a spiritual way, leads to ignorance, which is the supporting condition for the next chain of causation. I'm not probably not explaining this very well. I like to think of it more as a not as a circle or a linear chain, but as a matrix. I'm going to be quoting from a book called Transcendental Dependent Arising by Bhikkhu Bodhi. And this is how he kind of describes how the different conditions give rise to other conditions, which gives rise to sentient beings. And this is kind of wordy, and it really deserves, I don't know, being listened to many times or reading over and over again. Each transient entity emerging into the present out of the stream of events bearing down from the past, absorbs into itself the causal influx of the past, to which it must be responsive. During its phase of presence, it exercises its own distinctive functions with the support of its conditions, expressing thereby its own immediacy of being. And then, with the completion of its actuality, it is swept away by the universal impermanence to become itself a condition determinant of the future. As I said, that's quite wordy and a lot of stuff being said in a short thing. There is another teaching that the Buddha taught in relationship to the 12-fold dependent conditions, and that is what is often translated as transcendental dependent arising. In the mundane order of ignorance going in, being the condition supporting all the other conditions and then leading to suffering, what happens is that we end back up with ignorance again. Nothing gets solved, and it's just an endless circle, what's called the cycle of samsara, or the ocean of samsara. Luckily, there is an answer to this. Otherwise, it would just be hopeless. And the Buddha described this as the transcendental dependent arising. You could think of the first mundane order as going around and around and around in a circle. And you could think of the transcendental order, what Bhikkhu Bodhi calls the transcendental order, as a kind of an uprising spiral, never-ending spiral, into liberation. And he says that the Buddha taught that suffering is the basis or the supporting condition for faith. And faith, and then he goes into a whole chain of conditions. Faith is the supporting condition for joy, which is the supporting condition for rapture, the supporting condition for tranquility, happiness, concentration, knowledge and vision of things as they are, disenchantment, dispassion, emancipation, and finally, knowledge of destruction of the what he's called the cankers, or which is often called the afflictions. Today I'd like to talk about how suffering is the supporting condition for faith. Suffering, on one level, means pain. I'm sorry. This is what the Buddha said about this, about suffering. Birth is suffering. Disease is suffering. Old age is suffering. Death is suffering. Wanting what we don't have is suffering. Having what we don't want is suffering. And he said in the end, the whole mass of existence is unsatisfactoriness and suffering. Reverend Master Khotan, when he gave the lectures on the mandala of the Buddha Mothers, Refuge of All Beings, in his very first lecture, he starts off describing suffering. And I remember when I was listening to that, after he got about 2 minutes in, I was getting really depressed because, oh God, that's right. He says, behold, the contents of our own minds, the very sea of samsara, the very source of suffering, arising and falling and passing away, running after, pushing away, what we don't, what we want, what we don't want, what we crave, what we despise. It is the same with the entire universe. Even as we sit here, multitudinous beings experience all sorts of suffering. At this very moment, many millions of beings experience pain and sorrow. Birth is suffering. Disease is suffering. Old age is suffering. Death is suffering. Wanting what we don't have is suffering. Having what we don't want is suffering. Indeed, as the Buddha said, the whole mass of existence is unsatisfactoriness and suffering. He goes on to say, all the sea of suffering makes no sense, has no purpose, and no meaning. As long as that is so, we rise and fall in it. We drown and return again. We drink the waters on which we float, and the salt of them causes us to crave more. We are driven on the winds that arise into the storms. We crave solidity and stability, and there is none. We crave a stopping place, and there is none. We look to see some ship that will rescue us, and there is none. There is only the maddening arising and falling, drowning and reviving within this ocean. And at one point he goes on to say, it's like a dull, endless dull ache. So, that's pretty depressing. To think about. And as Bhikkhu Bodhi says in this commentary on transcendental dependent arising, most people live their lives in that way of, you know, grasping after, pushing away, wanting what we want, not wanting what we don't want. And he says that most people react to this state of affairs in one of two ways. This is the mundane way of reacting to it, both of which operate at a purely psychological level, as he says. In the first case, we will react to suffering in an unhealthy manner, as when we arouse resentment against the source of our displeasure and seek relief by annihilating it, ignoring it, or running away in pursuit of some easy escape. In the second case, we will react to suffering in a mentally healthy way, as when we fortify our minds with patience and courage, strengthen our capacities for endurance, and seek to resolve the problem in a realistic manner. But though the second approach is definitely preferred to the first, in neither case does that inward revolution take place, which awakens us to our extreme need for deliverance and compels us to set off in a new direction previously unknown and unexplored. He calls this the urge for liberation. And he says it can only set in when pain and sorrow have been confronted with reflective awareness and recognized as symptoms of a deeper ailment demanding a radical therapy. It's not enough to just, you know, wallow in the suffering. That doesn't work. It doesn't work to try easy ways out. It doesn't work to try to reason our way out of it, or, you know, just the conventional ways of dealing with our problem. As Reverend Master said, there are some in this world for whom the ordinary answers will not suffice. When we encounter suffering on that deep level, we come to realize that we need to do something different. And Bhikkhu Bodhi says, the arising of such a realization depends upon the adoption of a new perspective from which the fact of suffering can be faced in its full range and universality. You know, being a Theravadan monk, he goes into analyze suffering in many different ways. But to me, it means that when we reach that point where ordinary answers won't suffice, that is the point where suffering then becomes the supporting condition for faith. Because it is suffering in that deepest level that seeks us, as Bhikkhu Bodhi says, that impels us to seek the way to liberation. However, it's not enough just for those conditions to arise. What's required is for us to then encounter a true teaching. In our case, the Buddha's teaching. The Buddha held out this great jewel of liberation for us when we are suffering and our suffering seems ceaseless. He said, there is a way out of that. Come, I'll show you. And this is the beginning of faith. In the Five Diamond Points lectures that Reverend Master gave, the third point of the Five Diamond Points is faith. He says the third diamond point that penetrates all the way to the center is faith, refuge in the three treasures. Sometimes Shraddha or faith is translated as confidence. I'm quoting from him, but I actually prefer the translation of faith because confidence can mean any number of things. And then he goes on to say, we take refuge in the Buddha because he taught us a way of training. We take refuge in the Dharma, the way of training, and we take refuge in the Sangha, people to train with us. To take refuge in the Buddha means to have some level of trust or confidence that what the Buddha taught is relevant to us. To take refuge in the Dharma means to actually explore this and not simply stand on the outside looking in. To explore it means to study it, but also to study it with living people who are actually practicing it. It is quite different from practicing it on one's own or from reading about it. And to take refuge in the Sangha means that we go to people who teach the Dharma and learn from them, although it can have broader implications and meaning. To take refuge in the Sangha means to learn from people who are practicing, to learn from people who have more experience and practice than we do. Faith, in this way, then becomes something not abstract or outside of ourselves, but something that we can actually, in a sense, do. We do faith. And, you know, recently I was confronted in my own mind with an ongoing koan that has been with me for pretty much all of my life. And I remember waking up in the morning, this wasn't too long ago, and just feeling this absolute sense of hopelessness over it, that I had been trying to address this aspect of my own being in so many different ways. I had tried to get rid of it. I had tried to ignore it. I had tried to indulge it. I tried to forget it. I tried to, I got angry at it. I got frustrated with it. And then it would just seem like I would just be back right at the beginning again. And at that moment, I just, it's like in the scripture where it says, all is defilement, earth, earth. To Indra, the creator, we cry. And what that means to me is when we find ourselves that it just seems hopeless, that we just keep going round and around and around, we throw up our hands and we ask for help. And I did so. I asked for help on the deepest level to help me, I asked for liberation from this thing that was, this aspect that was, seemed to be causing me so much hopelessness and despair. I didn't get a, you know, angel choir coming down and showing me the way, but for me it was an important thing because I realized that the outward surfaces of this koan, if I could put it that way, or the outward surfaces of this problem were pointing to something deeper, much, much deeper, and much more basic. And that is, as the Buddha said, the whole mass of life and death, life or birth and death, and I forget how it was written now, but what I said before, the whole mass of existence. It is true that only we can find our way out of that, that only we can save ourselves, and there is something much bigger than what we normally think of as we or I. There is that which is bigger than what I normally regard as myself, that is actually eternal. And this is what is meant by great compassion. This is the void, unstained and pure, of the scripture of great wisdom. This is the purity of emptiness, the immaculacy of emptiness. And this is what I was calling on for help. It was my true self. Faith is a doorway into that. It is a gateless gate into that immaculacy of emptiness. And it is always open, and it is always inviting us to walk through it. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha.